Today, the Parsha, Devarim, is always read before Tisha B'Av. It's always read before Tisha B'Av. Now, you know, the three Haftoras that we read before Tisha B'Av, they're known as Gimel or Shalosh, Dipor Unusa. Those are the three of punishment or rebuke. Those talk about the prophets sort of rebuking and warning the Jewish people that if they don't return to Hashem, then Hashem is going to punish them. They're going to lose the Beis HaMikdash as we did. And of course we read that. Why are we reading these three Haftorahs? Because that's in preparation of Tisha B'Av. Because in Tisha B'Av, we mourn the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. After the 3 weeks of punishment comes the 7 weeks of comfort. And that takes us up to Rosh Hashanah. There are 7 weeks after Tisha B'Av. And then we read 7 weeks, we read the Haftorah of comfort. Basically, the Haftorah is synonymous with the time of the year. It's the same. We read it because it's the 3 weeks first of punishment before the destruction, 7 comfort after the destruction. We read 7 of comfort. The parsha that is always read before Tisha B'Av is Devarim. And the Haftorah that we read for Devarim is Siyoin Bamishpot Tipode Vishoveho Bitzdoko, which is a verse in Yeshaya, in chapter 1, and that's the verse 26. And that verse is sort of the end of the Haftorah. So after the Pasuk talks about all the various different punishment and how come the Jews didn't listen to Hashem and Hashem warned them, and you know, the different verses of, you know, that even an animal goes back to its master, the Jewish people. And why did, last week we read about, what did the Jewish people trade in, what for what? You know, if they trade in, you know, one God for another God, you know, maybe you trade in something which is worthwhile, but then they trade, you know, they went out to look for themselves for vanity and looking for wells of water which cannot sustain the water. But after all these rebukes, so the end of the Haftorah finishes with the words, Tzioin Bamishpot Tipadeh Vishaveha Bitzdaka. What is the literal meaning? Tzion. Tzion means what?
Zion.
What is Zion?
The homeland.
What is Zion? Like, what's another name for Zion? Jerusalem. Like we say, Ki Mitzion Teitze Torah Udvar Hashem Mirushalayim. From Zion, Torah will come out, and the word of Hashem from Jerusalem. So Zion is another name for Jerusalem. Well, what is the... Okay, so literally it means Tzion. Tzion, which means Jerusalem. Zion, b'mishpat tipode, will be redeemed with mishpat, with laws, with the judgment, v'shaveho, and those who are captives. Zion is what is the city, is Zion. The captives are the people that live in Zion, those are the inhabitants. They will, her captor, those who were captured from Zion, her captures, Bitzdaka will basically be redeemed through Tzedakah. That's the one of the simple meanings. It's very different meanings. Now, everything that we read, you know, of course, in the Pasuk has the literal meaning, but we're also supposed to apply it to ourselves in our lives, because just like we have an exile and we have a way to redeem it, we're talking about when the Jewish people were exiled, the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed,
and we're figuring out ways how to bring our exiles back through mishpat, through tzedakah. The same thing is our inner soul. We have the Zion in ourselves, and we have a way of redeeming ourselves. The discussion in this maimer, will review a little bit the maimer, the talk of the Alter Rebbe, Reb Shneur Zalman, on the on this last verse of the Haftorah, which, by the way, today is the fifth day of Menachem Av. On the fifth day of Menachem Av is the yahrzeit of the Arizal, the Ari HaKodesh. The Ari was the one who told us that mitzvah legalei zois haChochmah, that it is a mitzvah today to reveal the inner part of Torah, to reveal the Kabbalah, a little bit, the teaching of the Kabbalah. And the previous generations, even the great scholars who studied, maybe it was done in a quiet way, in a the Talmud talks about who is the one that is allowed to learn Kabbalah. It was only very few, but the Arizal said, now it's a mitzvah to reveal, to bring it out more to the public. That's how the Kabbalah became, and the Hasidic teaching became more based on the Arizal's statement. Dari lived in Sfat towards the end. He's buried in Sfat, and he lived with some of the greatest, with Rabbi Yosef Karu, with Al-Kabatz, with the various great sages. They lived in Sfat. He was actually a very young man when he passed away. You know, he was very young. He wasn't even 40 by the time he passed. But he had accomplished a tremendous amount. The Alter Rebbe's Hasidus and path in the Kabbalah is based on the Ari, is based on the Rikot. There were certain, you know, differences in, you know, exactly how to interpret various different ideas of the Kabbalah. And even the Siddur, when you see right in the Chabad Siddur, it says it's based on the version of the Ari HaKodesh, based on Nusach Ari. This is all over. So his yahrzeit is today, so that's a special day also to learn a little bit about the ideas that started with Arizal, and to give us a little feeling for some of his teachings through the Alter Rebbe's lenses, through the Alter Rebbe's chassidus. So we're trying to say, you know, we also have a soul, and our soul is sometimes in exile. Just like the Jewish people are in exile, and so our soul is in exile. Of course, the Jewish people are in exile when the nations came and took us away from our land, where we belong, our homeland, and sent us into exile, into places where we're not in charge anymore, we're not in control. So we all have our souls, you know, the place where we belong, where we ought to be, where we want to be, and which inherently is the place of Israel where we have to be. And then we have that, unfortunately, sometimes we are taken into captivity, or sometimes we are not allowed to express ourselves. So we have a neshama, we have a soul, which has a goal. It's brought down into this world with a goal, with a purpose. And the purpose is for the, we'll discuss it a little bit more in detail. The purpose of the soul is to overcome the obstacles and reveal the godliness within himself and within the world. And to show how all the clouds, you know, to blow them away, disperse all the clouds, all the covers, all the hindrances, and to reveal the purity and the holiness of everything of Hashem and everything in the world. But sometimes the reverse happens. Sometimes happens the reverse. Sometimes a person should really master the ability to take control and love Hashem and be excited about Hashem, and not be all excited about material and physical delights. But sometimes it's the opposite, or too many times it's the opposite, that the person seeks delight and happiness from only physical material things, and the spiritual soul is left behind. So that means that the soul is not being revealed by the person, and therefore that's in captivity. And basically this verse is translated as how to reveal that soul of yourself through mishpat,
and through tzedakah. But first, let's stop with the word Zion. Okay? The first thing is the word Zion. It calls Zion, I said, is Yerushalayim is called Zion. It's called Tzion. But what does the word Tzion mean? What is the word Tzion? What is the literal word of the, what is the real literal meaning of the word Tzion?
Like a sign.
What?
A sign.
A marker. Tzion means a marker. You know, like when people come to like the cemetery, they come to the Tzion, because on a grave you have a marker. A Tzion is a marker. What does a marker mean? What is a marker? The concept of a marker is that you actually don't see what's in there, but it just marks a place. It just tells you, it marks something that there is something there. There's a marker, which means it represents the a level which is not really revealed, which is not open, you don't see it, but it marks a certain space. It tells you about a certain place. This is a place, this is where there's a grave site. This is, you mark on a chart, you mark on your piece of paper, you mark a place, you know, where it is. That just represents the place. Now, so we're going to talk a little bit about the soul. The soul of man. And we're going to talk about a level of a soul which is called Tzion. Tzion, which is just the level of the marker of the soul. And we're going to discuss a little bit, the Maimer, we're going to discuss that there's a certain element of the soul that needs to be redeemed. But that element of the soul needs to be redeemed, but it's not in captivity. There's a certain element of the soul which is actually can go into a captivity. What do I mean? What are we talking about over here? There is the essence of the soul. The essence of the soul, by anybody, that cannot go into captivity. That's not in captivity. It's always there. That defies any captivity. You can't take it into captivity. You cannot allow it to express. In other words, there is a part in your soul which is always there. And you cannot take away that soul from what it is. It always remains pure. You always have that spark, you always have that point of your soul which is in the person, which is always there. It doesn't matter whether you know God, you're observant, you're not observant, it always is there. However, you have to redeem it, redeeming it means in this case, it's not captured, you have to allow it to shine. But it's not, if it's not functioning there, it's not doing its job, then it's not a captivity, but you have to redeem it. That's why the word is Tzion, Zion, that's the higher level of the soul. The Mishpat, through Torah, we'll see, Tipodeh will be redeemed. But Vishaveho, those, her parts that were captured, which means the soul, that's the point of the soul, but the soul also has expressions. It has expression of thought and emotion, it has what it wants. What is the soul? What is the expression of the soul? The expression of the soul is to love God, to understand God, to connect to God. But when a person uses their mind and their heart to love other things, and they don't use their heart and their mind, and the soul inevitably is connected with the body, as we'll see in a minute, so then that means that the soul's expressive functions, which is its intellect and its emotions, are in captivity because they're actually captured because they are not, they're the expressive part of the soul. The inherent part, the essence of the soul, that can never go into captivity. But the expressive part of the soul, what expression means, that it needs to function and do something, it needs to understand, it needs to feel, it is an emotional, that can be in captivity. Why is that in captivity? Because it's used for other things. So let's go back a little bit to discuss a little bit about the soul. Where do soul comes from? And where does... Shem created everything. But there is a difference between things that were created in the sixth day of creations, and there are things that were created before 6 days of creation. 6 days of creation, we know God created the world in the first 6 days of creation. But not everything was created in those 6 days. There were things that were created before that. The Medrash, in Medrash Rabbah, talks about, it says that there are six things that were created before the world was created. He says some of them were actually literally created, and some of them were in Hashem's mind, sort of, to create it. He had in mind to create them, and in the level, in his mind, they were created, because by Hashem's, his thought and his actions are not that much different, because Hashem's thought creates as well. But it says that the neshamas, the souls, the body was created when? On the sixth day of creation. We know that. But the souls, they come from, it says, Hashem's thought, which comes before creation. And they prove it. The Medrash proves it. It says that, who did Hashem consult before he created the world?
The angels?
No. He created the souls. Actually, the souls were created during the 6 days of creation, because it says that the souls came beruach piv, from the breath of his mouth they came, and there are different opinions whether the angels were created on the second day of creation or they were created on the fifth day, on Thursday or on Monday. Because on Thursday it says, "Va'of yofev, let the bird fly." So the bird fly, say that the bird, the flying, represents the angels. But the nisha, the soul, the angels were created during the 6 days of creation, whether on the third, second, or on the fifth day, on Monday or on Thursday. But the souls, they are from God's thoughts, so to speak. They come before the creation of the world. So you have a soul that was created. I want to emphasize, what do I mean created? There's a real entity, just like there's an entity, like we look at something, an entity meaning a being, something that was not and is there. There was not a soul, and now there is a soul. Not only one soul, there was a lot of souls. Now, when Hashem created, He created a bunch of souls which were the root of all the souls that were later on going to be separated. So, originally, there was a creation of souls. So to speak, in Hashem's thought, there were souls. Souls were created. God consulted the souls. Should I make a world? And then God created everything. And then what happens? You have that soul, which is in God's thoughts, Hashem brings it down into a body and fuses this high soul, which comes from Hashem's thought, together with a physical body. He blows in the soul into the body. Now, why does Hashem do that? Why does Hashem take such a precious high soul, which He created, which is the level of God's thought? Basically, the creation, generally, we say that's God's speech, because we say it's the 10 sayings that God created the world. Those are, that's just like there's a difference, so to speak. We use this language because that's the way for us to associate that. Just like by a person, there's a difference between the thought and the speech. Likewise, the difference between sort of the other creations and the souls is like the difference between God's speaking and God's thought. So the Jewish people, Jewish souls, or the souls, Neshamas Yisrael, the souls, they come from the level of Machshava, they come from thought, they come from before creation. And then God takes that soul and brings it down into this world and fuses it into the body. So, why does God do that? To for an elevation.
Yeah.
That's called Yerida Tzorech Aliyah.
What did you say? To elevate this human body that he's made from clay. Life.
Not only for the body, it's also for the soul.
Because the soul gets to grow while it's in the physical.
Oh, but the question becomes... So that's called Yerida Tzorech Aliyah. It's a descent for the purpose of an elevation. In Hasidic thought, it explains, you know, when we look at the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and everything else, you know, it seems like very sad. It seems like very broken. But when you look at deeper in the Hasidic thought and in the thought, we see every setback that we have in life, every destruction that we experience is actually a springboard. It's actually, deep down, brings you a greater elevation. You know, sometimes, you know, Hasidus gives an example for it. But I will take the Hasidic example, I'll use it a little bit differently. Let's say there are parents, they want to spend time with their children. Right? They want to spend time with their children. Or especially the working spouse. They want to spend time with their children. They want to be with their family. And because they're trying to provide for their family, so sometimes, or a lot of times, the children feel neglected. They would want the parents to be with them, to take them for a trip, to go for a walk, to have fun with them. They want them to... Now, the parents love their children. Why are the parents working so hard? And why are they away from the children? And why are they not there with them, giving them and being with them all the time? It's not because they don't love them. It's the contrary, because they're trying to provide and trying to give them more and more and more, and they don't want to lose the opportunity. I'm not giving the exact example because it talks about a different thing, but I'm just giving a little bit of that example that Hasidus gives. But because they're trying to give them, and if they miss their opportunity, sometimes they have to be away. So the child feels neglected, that feels destruction. But that's not really a destruction, because for that level right now, it's a destruction. But that is for the purpose of giving them a lot more. You know, they're missing out. Sometimes you're missing out things like now. It's for a greater benefit. So Hashem takes away the Beis HaMikdash. It has to be in order for us to give us a lot more. And the tzuris, the trouble that we're experiencing, it's not just a punishment for what we've done. Because if it was just a punishment, so the punishment should get lighter. Over the years, we've already suffered so much. How much more punishment do we need? I mean, we don't need any more punishment. But the point here is, somehow, just like in this example, when you're away, when Hashem is sort of away from us, we feel neglected, we feel destruction, the purpose is for elevation. Same thing is the descent, the fact that we struggle, the fact that we have hardships, the fact that we are challenged, and the fact that we, you know, have to sort of deal with so much stuff, is not because God doesn't like us. It's not because He neglects us, because He doesn't care about us. The contrary. We don't know yet, we don't feel the benefit right then and there, but the benefit is to come, you know, when the redemption will come. So when you look at it that way, and maybe we'll give an example, you know,
a woman giving birth comes through so much pain, but at the end, you know, when you have a beautiful baby, you have something to show for, then at least you know that the pain was for creation, was for something beautiful that you have. So now, at the time that it's painful, but a woman who's giving birth knows that there's the baby coming. So with all the pain, it's still bearable because you say, okay, at least something. Sometimes there is destruction you don't see. Yeah, you don't see the benefits. You see, all what you see is destruction. You don't see, you don't know of any good coming. That's the galus, the exile. We don't know. Or that's some problems that we have, that we don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. We don't see where it's leading. We don't see the benefit, but...
Can you address the shootings that have been happening?
That's too fresh and too on the... And I don't think it's... I never claim or suggest that I have any answers to any questions why it happens, and I'm as traumatized, if you want to say, and devastated as everybody else who knows such senseless, and you hear, a lot of the people that were there and people that lost their lives. It's just so, so sad and so unnecessary. But now it's, yeah, that's another. But one thing I do know is that I may not understand and not know, but Hashem, He understands. We don't know the whole picture. I tell you, I find it very easy now. You know, I always think about myself and I see that a lot of times there's things, I've said this in the past, but I really see it now. You know, sometimes you have an idea in your mind, sometimes you see it. I see people saying things, whether questioning about what I did or what I didn't do, and there's so much I want to tell them, they say to me, I didn't know that. Oh, you didn't tell me that. I said, I didn't tell you that. But sometimes there's things I can't tell you. That some people tell me things in confidentiality, or sometimes I can't tell you. Now, you're coming to judgment and you're saying, because you're only judging by what you see. You don't know the rest of the story. You don't know what's behind the curtain. You just see what's on stage. That's what you see. And you say, how unfair this is, Yes, it is unfair from what it seems, but I don't know the end. How could we question what Hashem does? It doesn't mean that there is no Hashem, Chas v'Shalom, that there is no judgment, that everything is just going. I don't know why it happened. That's the answer. But all I know is that there is a reckoning. I mean, that person who did this act, and why innocent people live their lives such senseless, I don't have the answer for that. But I just know that everything is controlled by Hashem, and the fact that I don't understand it and I don't know it, I can see that. Why would I even expect to understand and know it? That's not going to shake my belief in Hashem. That's not going to deter me from believing Hashem. And that's why people who witness 6 million of our brothers and sisters being so savagely murdered in all kinds of terrible ways, still kept on saying Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Now, that didn't justify or explain or anything else, A lot worse than the 20 people being mowed down or whatever in Ohio and in Texas, in El Paso. But those are tragedies. But yet, so what I'm saying is, I can't explain. Of course not, I can't explain. I mean, there's not an explanation. But I know that, Hashem does things, and I don't know why Hashem does that. And I'm infuriated, I'm angry at the people that do it. And for people that, support things like that, the hate talk on the different websites, the anti-this, anti-that, all kinds of talk that causes, that shouldn't happen. Of course, we're supposed to condemn it with all the things. But, what? I'm sorry?
And not only that, I feel like we're all turning blind eyes, or we're living in a very scary world where people, a brother mowed down a sister. Mm-hmm.
They still don't have a motive.
Did the parents not know?
So, the point here is that if the soul comes from such a high level, what's the purpose to bring it down? And it is to elevate. And the question is, where are we going to elevate the soul to if the soul comes already from such a high level? So where are we going to bring it to? It says it's an elevation. It's a descent for the purpose of an elevation. How are we going to elevate it? Where are we going to elevate it to? So in the Hasidic thought, there is the two energies of Hashem, the two lights of Hashem, which is called Memale Kol Almin and Sobev Kol Almin. Memale Kol Almin, see, Kol Almin is the same. Kol Almin means all worlds. But there is, Memale means that fills all the worlds. It fills would mean like you fill up a cup. So the water fills the cup. So there's an energy of Hashem which fills the cup. What does it mean, fills the cup? So, you know, you can only put in that much water that the cup can hold, right? So in other words, there's a vessel, and the vessel holds what you pour into it. So there's an energy of Hashem, a light of Hashem, which is measured, which is gradual. It's measured according to each of the vessel, and that descends according to the level as it comes down. Every created being gets a measured amount. That's called Memale Kol Alma, that fills the world. Then you have the energy, the light of Hashem, which is called the Sobev Kol Alma. The Sobev Kol Alma means which surrounds the world. It's not something that fills the cup, which means that it's not measured by the cup because it's in a much higher level, but it surrounds it. Now, normally we think when talk about surrounding, we talk about that it's somewhere out there and not there. But here surrounding means conceptually, which means the energy that is associated with that particular creation or all creations is such that there is no relationship between that energy and the created and that's created, but it's almost as if it surrounds it. So it's a much more powerful, not degraded according to that level. Say, for example, if we can say, so if you put in a currency in a bulb more than it can take, then the bulb will break. So what kind of a currency can come into the bulb? Measured according to the bulb. That's the electricity that you can have to make it work, or an outlet, whatever it is. If you'll put in a greater voltage and you put it, the thing won't hold. It's not measured according to that. But imagine that you can put a greater voltage and yet the light should still be there. So there is a fusion between that energy and the light without the light breaking, because it doesn't sit in it and it doesn't break it. It's just there. So it's basically there, but it's like around it. It doesn't go inside of it. So it's not too of a strong current because it doesn't associate with it. It doesn't format itself according to that. It's just there. But the lights of Hashem in the Kabbalah is known as the Sovev Kol Almin and the Memale Kol Almin. So the bottom line is, I'm just giving you a little bit of the, after the whole long discussion over here, is that the level of Sovev Kol Almin, which is a higher level of energy, is what sort of keeps the energy that fills it in place. So he says like this. We start off in the beginning in the brachas. What do we say the first thing in the Berachot HaShachar? The first blessing that we say, of course we say, Moda Ani Lefanecha, we thank Hashem. And then similar to that blessing is also, don't make me tell at your dime, but then we say, Elakai. You say, Neshama Shenasata Bi, the soul that you've given to me. So you say, Tahirahi, you say it's pure. You know, that's the bracha then. Okay. So we start off by saying, God, the soul you have given me. First thing we're saying, it's pure. And then it goes down. First thing we say when we wake up from our sleep, we told Hashem, it's pure. You gave us a pure soul. And then you say, Ato Baroso, you created it. Ato Yotzarto, you formed it. Then you say, Ato Nafachta Bi, you blew it into me. Which means this is all the steps that it comes down. Tohirahi,
in the level of the, it's his Tihiru law, the supreme purity, that would refer to the level of Atsilus, the highest level of the four world. Then we talk Baroso, you created it, that would be the level of Bria. Yitzarto, that would be the level of Yitzira. And then Ato Nefachto Bi, you blew it into you. So you took that soul, and you brought it down from the highest level, and you blew it into me. So now there is a connection from the soul with the body, and the body is, it's come down, formed in the body. Now, how are this staying together? Now you brought, you fused two things, how did it stay together? It says, Va'ato Mishamro Bikirvi, you guard it within me, you hold it within me. That is that sort of light, the surrounding light, which sort of keeps the soul, that mamala soul, the level of Nafakhtabi, keeps it together, that it shouldn't fly away, you know, after, once our time comes to go, after 120 years, that soul allows, it flies away, so it's no longer connected to
is
the body.
Is that the same as what happens when we're given the Ten Commandments, our soul?
Yes, exactly, yep. It flew away, but we still stayed alive. We didn't fully leave, but, you know, a big chunk of our soul was actually flew away.
After
the Torah was given.
Parcha
Mishmosim, each one of the Ten Commandments.
When we were given the Ten Commandments. Is this so powerful that our souls...
Oh, when the first couple of commandments we could take.
Right. So, but he says like this. He basically starts off with the level of prayer. So with the level of how we start our day. So before we say, Moda Ani, we start Hashem, we admit to Hashem. And then we do the Shema Yisrael. And then we do the Amidah. So, you know, we do Psukhe de Zimra. So we do Shema Yisrael, we do the Amidah. So the first thing is we start with, we're saying Moda Ani. Moda Ani means I thankfully acknowledge. Moda means also thank you. But Moda also means I acknowledge. So Moda Ani, so the way the English translated, I thankfully acknowledge. Now, what does it mean, acknowledge? What do you mean that I thankfully acknowledge? What do you mean I acknowledge? Now, I acknowledge something usually, you know, usually it means I will acknowledge that you're right. So in other words, we have a disagreement, right? So modim would mean like, I acknowledge that, you know what, you're right. What is there to acknowledge to Hashem? I mean, are we trying to acknowledge to Hashem something that, okay, you know, Hashem, you're right, I'm acknowledging your existence. What are we acknowledging to Hashem? What do we need to acknowledge to Hashem? So he says like this, what we're acknowledging to Hashem is actually, we have a different perspective than Hashem, and we're actually acknowledging that our perspective is the wrong one, and Hashem's perspective is the right one. What's from our perspective? From our perspective is that whatever we see is existence, because we see it. So since we see it, or in the terms of the Kabbalah, it's called Yesh Me'ayin. We have something from nothing. So what we're saying is something. Yes, there is an entity here. There's something here because we see. This is here. So this is the yesh. This is the existence. Existence to us is our reality. What we can feel, see, touch,
in the physical.
Smell the physical. That's yesh. That's is. It comes me'ayin. It comes from nothing because we don't see Hashem. We don't see energies. We don't see mamalukam. We don't see sevim kolam. We don't see anything. So from our perspective is yes, yesh. Oh, we acknowledge that God created everything. Fine. That's one thing. That's our perspective. But Hashem's perspective is just the opposite. The real existence is Hashem. The energy, the spirituality, godliness. God is the true existence. And all the expressions of Hashem's powers in the world, that's true. And the less we, the creations and everything, and the more physical, the more materialistic, the further they are from the purity of Hashem, that's more nothing. Hashem is the real existence, and we're nothing over here. This is of no value. I mean, Because anything in this world is not independent, doesn't have any independence, and is not really existence. Hashem says, you know, I mean, what are you, what do you think that you're, without Hashem, you think you're somebody? You're nothing, you know. You've seen a kid, you know, parents are filling up the bank account with money, so he has money to spend, and he keeps on bragging how much money he has. You don't have anything, you know, your father keeps on giving you, or your mother puts it in your bank account, you have it. I mean, Hashem keeps on giving everything we have. We don't have anything on our own. Hashem puts it in our bank account. Hashem gives us life. Hashem gives, well, somebody gave me an example. It says, you know, sometimes a parent wants the kid to get a job in the camp. Camp is not interested in what he can do. But the parents really want him to, they want him to feel, they want him to have a low self-esteem. So the father goes over to the director of the camp, he says, listen, I don't need you to pay my son anything. I don't want him. I want him out of the house, number one. I want to feel good that he's going to do a good job. I tell you what, I'm going to pay you, and you pay my son. Mm-hmm. Don't tell him. Mm-hmm. Okay, and the son feels so good. He thinks, oh, I made all this money, and I'm such a good counselor, and they like me, and they love me, and they want me, they gave me a job. Hey, wait a minute. You know, you didn't do nothing. It's your father that is paying. Hashem is our father. Hashem is giving us. We think we're smart, we're doing, and we're working, we're making all this money, and we're doing all these good things. Yeah, that's what it looks like to you. You think that you're doing something. You're doing nothing. The Eibishter, Hashem is doing everything for you. So, Hashem looks at us, he says, you guys are nothing down here because you don't have anything. You're really not an entity. You're totally, totally dependent on me, on Hashem, on the spirituality. What are you? You're nothing. And the real essence is Hashem. So what do we say when we say Moidani? We thankfully acknowledge. What does that mean? That means you say, you know what, Hashem, you're right. We acknowledge that. This is our feeling. We feel that we are something because we've been created as feeling like that way. But the truth is that you are the one of everything. So that's the way we start. And that's, you see, sometimes there are certain levels that you need to be intellectually capable, you need to think about things, you need to appreciate it, you have to study, meditate, reflect in order to get an understanding. But to admit, everybody can admit, you know, in other words, to agree that Hashem is right doesn't take a lot of intense reflection and meditation. It's something that we can say. Everybody can say, Moda ani lefanecha, I admit you are right, I am wrong. But that's not enough. Just saying, acknowledging that Hashem is right and wrong, and I'm wrong, or Hashem is the main thing, basically that would mean everything in this world that we have is not really of much value. I don't know if you heard ever that story, we said it several times, about the person who was stuck on an island and with the schmaltz over there, with the chicken fat. You ever heard that story about in that place, you know, the rocks were diamonds and everything else, and he was hungry and he picked up the rock, wants to pay the store. He says, it's no value over here. So he says, what do I pay with? Over here we use chicken fats, we use, you know, chicken fat. Okay. So he worked very hard, he got to see if I paid, and then, so, but when he was the beginning, he came there and he filled all his pockets with the diamonds, he thought that it was valued. Eventually he makes it back home, so he threw everything away, he makes it back home. And now he's a rich man. He got all the schmaltz in there. He packs up all the schmaltz. He comes back to a place where he lives, and the thing is smelly. It's the chicken fat is ribbon. So the guy has to be paid. He says, no, what are you paying with schmaltz? This is worthless, smelly stuff here. So he digs in his pocket. He finds, you know, he had to put in those diamonds originally. He finds, oh, a few pieces of those diamonds, they were worth, precious, worthless. You know, they were enormous. So it says, you know, Shem sends down the world into this world. The precious stuff is the Torah and mitzvahs. Those are the diamonds. Those are the real world. But the soul comes down to this world, starts dealing with chicken fats, things that the money, things that the honor, things that all the good things. And then if once it's time to go back home, you come back there, you say, hey, look all the chicken, it's worthless over here. Oh, you did a few mitzvahs, you did a few good deeds. Okay, that's precious. That's of a tremendous value. So the one thing is to realize, admit, yes, Hashem, Torah, mitzvahs, that's the most important thing. And us over here, the material, physical, is really of no significance. But that's not intellectual. That's something which we admit, we agree to Hashem. This is what it is. But the question becomes, is this enough? The answer is not enough. And the reason why it's not enough is because acknowledging something without really appreciating, without feeling it, you can very easily sort of forget it. It doesn't motivate you enough to be able to actually act on it. It's very famous, we mention all the time. Seems like to me that this is the most famous piece of Talmud that the Alter Rebbe quotes in his talks, is he quotes the idea of Ganva Apu Machtarta Rachmona Kari. It means that the paradox, you have a thief, he's standing on the cellar trying to break into somebody's house, and he says, Hashem, help me that I should be successful. I shouldn't be caught. I should be able to steal. So, wait a minute. It seems a paradox. Why are you praying to Hashem? You believe in Hashem, so why are you going to steal? You know, Hashem says you shouldn't steal. Hashem will provide for you in a honest way. No, but you don't believe in Hashem. So that's why you're going to steal. So why are you praying to Hashem? It shows that just believing, just acknowledging Hashem, it's something, it's something which, you know, you may not connect the dots. You know, you may think that it's there, but you may not connect the dots. So you need to do more than that. So that's why we have the rest of the davening. We start off with Moirani, everybody can do. Then we start the rest of the davening is the brachas, and then, but we're out of time. Then comes the level of love and the level of connection to Hashem. And, you know, basically, if we are in captivity, in other words, the Maimer finishes up, if we're in captivity, in other words, we don't allow for our emotional things that we're, so how do we get out of it? So the answer is through the study of Torah and the act of kindness, but tzedakah. In other words, having pity and compassion on another person arouses Hashem compassion in us. Shavel b'tzedakah, when we give tzedakah, when we feel bad for another person, and we give tzedakah, you know, tzedakah can have different forms, whether it's literally charity, giving money, or helping another person, making somebody feel good, being there for somebody else, and being of a support for them. That's really how you redeem your own self. You know, people said that, the Rebbe would many times advise people, and he says, when you start feeling down and depressed about yourself, go ahead and do something good for another person. If you do something good for another person, it also has the miracle that it'll help you too, because if you do something for somebody else. But in addition to that, if you have mercy and you have compassion and you feel for somebody else, then Hashem will have compassion for you, and that's the way you will redeem it. But I guess we got a little cut up and it's a long mimer, but at least we learned a few points.